So I think what we need to do first to make this official is I need to make sure I've got the right human being in the room here. I think I know who you are, but could you identify yourself, please?
Kelly Stoltz.
Okay, you've won. You've won what's behind door number three, so congratulations. It is the refrigerator, freezer, and the sofa bed. First off, I don't think that you should change your website. Okay. I like it as it is.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, I do that one myself, and, you know, to the best of my abilities, and I've run into a few errors, and, you know, it takes me about 3 days to load anything or get anything to happen, so I basically sort of have let it drift, and I think of it now as sort of a raft lost at sea in whatever the ether internet world is, you know. But people have actually said that to me. They said, don't get a new website. Now people think what I have is some kind of a lo-fi plugin.
Well, that's the problem, is now people are probably thinking it's like, you know, so hip, and it's not that point that it's hip, it's what you did.
Yeah, or didn't do, or didn't know how to do. Yeah, yeah, it's...
Isn't that weird how hip becomes hip when it's not designed to be hip?
Yeah, I guess that's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty odd.
Yeah, I've thought about that, too. I don't know where to go. Should I change it or should I not? But you say no. So I'm thinking that's two votes against.
I'm not sure that the powers that be, whoever they may be, are going to... And the other question is, will they let you keep the Coens Project and the Nito Arty pictures, you know, when suddenly, you know, the new album is sold, you know, hundreds of billions and zillions?
Oh, sure they will. Okay.
Is it in the contract?
It's not in the contract.
Uh-oh. Call the attorney.
But the only thing that I really pushed for was a vinyl release. So, yeah, well, you know, I was willing to sacrifice Coens and Nito Arty pictures for some vinyl, so... But I think I can sneak those through anyway.
And this release is a far cry from painting 100 record sleeves. So tell people, just because people can go to the website, but that was about as inspired as it gets. And I looked on eBay, and I didn't find any on there. So I guess that's good news.
Right. Well,
nobody decided to sell their, you know, their Gauguin Renoir version of...
Right. Well, I've got about 3 or 4 or 5 left. I've got a lot of covers that I painted that I ended up keeping that I liked too much. They just looked too cool. You know, I mean, basically the whole idea was a way to save money from having to print up, you know, a mass reproduction of one. And I knew a gal who worked, who, you know, I met at thrift stores, and she was painting a cover for this guy, Steve Lacy. And she was painting an original thing. She was much more talented at impressionist painting than I was. But I kind of picked up on that idea, and I was going to secondhand shops and buying a lot of used records, and I got to know the guys, and I said, let me have all these crappy Streisand records that have been here for the last 3 years. And you know,
poor Barbara.
Yeah, and let me paint over those. And so that's how that all worked. But yeah, the assembly line mentality did get a little tiring after 300 of those. You know, and now I'm down to, like, I have red paint and some really hard, crusty yellow paint. And
whoever gets those gets the special ones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
big, just an X. Sorry, I'm out of ideas.
Well, my roommate is trying to, he's telling me I need to paint the new one and just keep it going and just paint a few, you know. And he thinks that would be my ticket to big money and financial freedom if I were to sell like 10 of them for $40 a piece. But I don't know, you know.
Hang on another month. You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
So do you know anybody who bought one of your favorites?
In fact, this guy that I stayed with in Australia... this guy Julian, who ends up now playing music with me. The first time I went to Australia in 2003, he was the guy that, like, well, you get to stay with this guy Julian, who's a really good cook, nice guy. He's got a big house. He always lets all the musicians stay there. So I went to his house, and one night we were watching TV. All his records are in his TV room. And there, you know, I said, which one did you buy? And he pulled one that I almost didn't sell, which was Berlin by Night.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a beautiful kind of a wet Berlin rainy street scene that I painted some tulips and some weird buildings in. And I probably shouldn't have let that one go. It's better than some of the, you know, the Osmonds with buck teeth and, you know, black eyes that I saved. I should have kept that one. Maybe.
Oh, come on. The poor Osmonds. So it's not surprising to me, and I asked this question way too many times, so excuse me, but it's not surprising to me that you're bigger in England than your hometown. Now, is that true, or did I make that up?
Well, I would guess up until the last month or two that Sub Pop has really applied the pressure and gotten involved in some kind of payola scams with the local media, the Chronicle and the Guardian and the Weekly. I would say that was true as far as like Mojo Magazine and the Ptolemaic Terrascope and little things like that.
Little
articles. I mean, I'm not, I'm not playing Wembley and I wasn't greeted by any fans at the airport. And, you know, the shows were fairly well attended for being, you know, 14-hour plane ride from home. I was happy that we were in Scotland and 35 people were there to see us. I was pretty honored by that. But, you know, probably the biggest reception I've gotten has been in Australia, outside of the U.S. You know, it's weird to have to fly 14 or 15 hours to get the equivalent crowd that you might get in San Francisco. And if I were to drive an hour to Sacramento, I'd be playing for 6 or 7 people.
Perception reality, isn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It's all what the press does.
Yeah. It's true.
So on the BBC site, it says, it asks if this is a poppy release for Sub Pop. So, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, Rogue Wave, you know, people have a perception, obviously, of the old
Sub Pop.
But, I mean, you know, I look at the showcase that you're doing at South by Southwest, and, you know, Rogue Wave is there, and I would certainly consider them in the pop or power pop or whatever language we want to use here to label.
Right.
You know, let's label. It's important to label.
Yeah.
But how did that come to be?
How did Sub Pop signing come
to
be? Well, it came to be because I was signed up with the Jack Pine Social Club, a local label here. I was set to do my next record with them. And basically, the guy who I owe a lot to is Ben Blackwell, who plays with the Dirt Bombs. He's a drummer for the Dirt Bombs. He's been traveling the world, of course, with them, and he's often out with the White Stripes on tour helping out. And so he's been one of those people passing around CDs and talking about it, you know, helping me out quite a bit of his own accord. And I think it was just a situation where he was passing through Seattle and told them they should listen to this record. And the next day I sent one to him, and about a week later they were saying, hey, this is really good. We'd like to talk to you about the next one. It was wow. Just like that.
So 5 stars in Rolling Stone. Isn't that exciting? Of course, it's the Rolling Stone of today.
Well, 3.5.
Three, was it 3.5?
Yeah.
Now, don't you wish it was the 60s and you were getting the stars then?
Yeah, I do. You know. I don't know what does Ben think anymore?
I don't know. Well, I don't think he's associated anywhere near that. I think that publication's gone a whole. I'm being facetious. But,
yeah.
Mojo Rolling. I mean, it's interesting what people react to these days and why a record becomes important.
It was a real. It was a thrill. I would say I can't say it wasn't a thrill to be in Rolling Stone. You know, I mean, I read it when I was 14 years old and thought, I'll never get in there, or wouldn't it be nice to be in there, or you know, who are these otherworldly people that I read about in there? So I can now say that they're definitely not otherworldly people. They're just
normal folk like me.
Just regular folks like me. But it was pretty cool to be in there, you know, just for whatever. But I would say the magazine is pretty much a shell of its former self and has been for at least probably 23 years.
Right. So now people don't dig as deep as I do, and I know this has been told way too many times. Are you tired of the Brian Wilson story? Are you like totally tired? Because I try to ask questions that people don't ask.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you if you're tired of it first.
Not really.
Good.
Do you want to hear it?
Well, I think the listening audience out there in Radio Land, probably, I know you've told it. I've read it in way too many interviews, and I kind of have a rule that if it's another interview, but this one's too good.
Okay. Well, Brian did his hurricane. He did a thing for Hurricane Katrina where if you sent in $100 or more, he would double what you sent in, and the payoff to that was he would call you at your convenience at your house.
If he remembered.
Yeah.
If whoever it is who's pushing his button said, Brian, make a phone call.
Well, it wasn't Eugene Landy anymore. So
thank goodness.
I think it's he and Melinda. I think they're I think they're a pretty good team.
Yeah, I think so.
And, you know, he's obviously got a lot of heart still. And it was a situation where, you know, I hadn't donated and not much. I gave a little money and I started to feel guilty about that. And all of a sudden I was able to double my pleasure, double my money, get paid off, help people out, you know. So basically if you sent in any money to Brian's thing, he would double what you did and you could call. And so he called about 3 hours after I made my donation, which was a surprise. Now the thing is you're allowed to ask him one question. And so I figured I would have about a week to figure out my question.
You didn't ask who was Rhonda.
No, I didn't ask about Rhonda or Caroline or any of those people. I kind of didn't want to ask him a music nerd question. I wanted to speak songwriting language with him a little bit to just see how that went. I thought maybe that would engage his mind a little more than another, like, you know, right. question about
when you were mixing Pet Sounds.
Yeah, like, yeah, another Hal Blaine question you know, Murray question or something. So I said, now, Brian, you know, and this was true. I had just had my birthday, which was why I had $100 to donate. And my girlfriend had gotten my piano tuned for me. And I used to know how to play Meant for You, the first song on Friends, which is just about a 30-second song. One of my favorites. And it didn't quite sound right on piano, or at least, you know, it didn't sound right enough that I couldn't play it quite right. And it was a good way to break into Brian's brain and talk about that stuff. So I said, now, Brian, so he calls. You know, I get home, the phone rings. Hey, Kelly, it's Brian. And I said, hey, Brian. He said, hey, we'd like to thank you for your kind donation. It will help a lot of people.
Reading off the card.
And he said, Kelly, what do you do? And I said, I'm a musician, you know. And as I've said, it was just, that was a funny moment of my life
yeah,
where I was
exactly.
like, oh, Brian, actually, I'm a musician.
Yeah,
right. You know, it was kind of, I felt kind of silly. But I said, you know, I'm trying to play music and I really love your stuff. And he, good, Kelly, what's your question? I said, well, my piano has just been tuned. It doesn't sound right when I play Meant for You. What are the chords? Can you tell me the chords to it? A little bit of silence. And he said, I wouldn't know that. I said, oh, okay. He said, I'm sorry, Kelly, I don't know. I don't remember. Next question. Ask another one. And I said, you know, that was it. I thought that was my cool question that was going to engage Brian. I said, well, I wanted to stay on the musician tack again. And I said, well, what's your favorite chord? And he said, to play on the piano? And I said, yeah. And he said, at E. And so I went to my piano and did, you know, this note's for you. Bong. There you go, Brian. Okay, Kelly, you have a good luck with that piano. You know, keep at your career. Good luck. Bye. And that was it. And I was real excited. You know, that was enough. I talked to the guy for a solid minute. It was well worth $100.
Yeah.
You know, it was the equivalent of, like I said, it was sort of like could be phone sex. I was like,
it was pretty good. Yeah.
If I had a credit card, I'd be happy. You know, I'm hooked now.
Right.
I want to donate. I want to help people out.
And see what you can get next.
Yeah. Yeah. So about 2-3 minutes goes by and I'm kind of pacing up and down the hallway like, wow, I just talked to Brian Wilson, man. That was so cool. The phone rings. And I'm thinking, who am I going to call? My girlfriend, my dad, you know, who do I want to tell first? The phone rings. Hey, Kelly, it's Brian again. And I was like, hey, Brian, how you doing? Said, Kelly, that song, it starts on A flat. I said, okay, well, let me go to my piano. So I ran down my hall to my piano and I'm like, okay, Brian, here's an A flat, you know, and I bing, bing, and he goes, good, now go ahead and play it. So I played it, and I said, as I sit and close my eyes, there's peace in my mind, and I'm hoping that you'll find it too. And on the other end of the phone, he was singing along with me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I got to right about there, and that was it. You know, it was too much. I just said, Brian, that's a real thrill for me. Thank you so much. And he said, you're pretty good on that piano. You keep it up now. And I said, okay, Brian. He said, all right, take it easy. And that was...
It's wild.
That was it.
It's just one of those good ones. Okay, on to the album. Should we do a deep song-by-song analysis?
Sure, whatever you'd like to do with the record.
No, I'm not going to do it. Sorry.
Okay.
No deep song-by-song analysis. You know, I think this is where, in an interview, you move on to more fun things, because the fact is people can get the record and listen to it. And
yeah.
I've read so many analyses of every song. This one's a Beach Boys song.
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
and this one is dedicated to Ian McCulloch, which we'll go there in a second. And this one's dedicated to... I read in an interview, though, that it was an Irish newspaper, that you've been writing the songs for over 4 years.
Yeah, well...
That's a long time.
Yeah, well... Antique Glow, the last record, came out in 2001, and, you know, I kind of found myself at that time without a label to put it out. That's why I did the record pressing thing myself. I did a limited run. I figured this could be the end of the road, and I want to have a vinyl record, you know, of myself. So, you know, I made that, and then that kind of took on a life by getting picked up by a guy in Australia and a label in England and a label here. So I had to kind of promote that record each as a new thing for a period of about 3-4 years. And it was getting written up in Mojo in 2004. I mean, it was 3 years old by that point. But all that time I was writing songs. And if it were up to me, I would have made 2 or 3 records in that period of time. And it's, you know, maybe a good thing I didn't. I might have thrown some ones on there that I really loved at the time that I can listen to now and think, well...
So this became the best of the best.
This became kind of, maybe not... all the best, what I figured were the best kind of representatives of, I was in a real razzmatazz piano part, and that's kind of prank calls, is yeah, da da da, you know, the mystery tour kind of
right,
feel.
Right.
And, you know, Harry Nilsson I was listening to, and John Lennon, and all those dudes that they talk about. But, you know, it's like this was kind of the best and what I thought fit from beginning to end, and kind of made more sense than maybe if I had picked the 15 best, they might not have laid together so well.
And you got the vinyl release, but the CD package feels about as close to vinyl as is physically possible within the, and I got it, and I was like, ooh, inner sleeve.
Yeah, cool. Huh?
And I'm the guy who has the 6,000 records and the 6,000 or 7,000 45s and, you know, and a bunch of CDs. So I'm the geek like in the same way.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, but they haven't gotten me the vinyl yet. So I'm going to have to call Sub Pop and get that rapidly. Okay, so tell me three, rather than asking about the specific songs, I'll be serious for at least 10 seconds. Tell me about three songs on the new album and why people can't live without hearing them.
Oh, man, that is tough.
I ask tough questions.
That is really tough.
Well, I'm not going to ask you what is the meaning behind that. Come on, nobody needs that.
Well, let's see. My
Why are you just so damn excited about this album,
yeah,
Kelly?
Right, you can tell. My three favorite tunes on that record right now are... I would have to say Memory Collector. I like that one a lot. It's a nice piano song, and you get to hear my mom sing. She sings a couple lines in that song. I succinctly put together three verses, a chorus, and a bridge in under 2 minutes, and a little bit of a solo, and that's an achievement in itself, like brevity and not feeling like I needed to entertain people for...
Buddy Holly was able to do it, right?
Yeah, it's like I just started to hear songs where anybody who goes over 4 minutes, I can't deal anymore.
Yeah,
unless it's a jazz tune or The End by The Doors, I can do it once in a while, but just...
No, I know. I find myself playing the single versions of a lot of tunes from the 60s and 70s and even 80s because they just go on too... You know, it's like, come on. You don't need four. Now, mind you, Lips Like Sugar, I think that runs over four. That's like four and a half or something.
The Killing Moon is 5:45, but it's a minute.
But that's got to be... Yeah, it is. It is.
It's
you can hear that riff of, you know, near. Okay, I've got it.
It's too long. It's a minute too long. It strikes me now.
Which probably killed them in a way. Okay, back to you. But, you know, but when you think about it, right? Radio at the time, why weren't they as big as they could have been? K-Rock played Lips Like Sugar, but they didn't play that one quite as much.
You couldn't play The Killing Moon. It was too damn long.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Ian thought that it being the best song they ever wrote, I think he felt like, no way am I going to slice it up. Where are you going to cut it? It's all magic.
Yeah.
And I
can
understand, but you know, I don't know. Track four on the record, Words, I like, because that was recorded with the whole band in a studio and sounds real good. I kind of like my singing through a decent microphone. Sounds, you know, I'm happy to hear my voice. So I think people will like that. Those are two. And,
Now, what is the 7-inch single? What's the single release?
Well, there's two seven... Oh, what will be? What would...
Well, what would be, will be, maybe, can be...
Well, there's two 7-inch singles that are out. One is on Ben Blackwell's label in Detroit, Cass Records. And it has a song called Discount City, which is inspired by the 99-cent store right down the street on 24th and Mission. And the B-side of that is a baseball garage rock song about the 1984 Detroit Tigers that I grew up with. And that's kind of my own genre that I'm...
Is there a Sub Pop single, too?
No Sub Pop single yet. And there's one in Australia that I did, three originals, and then an Emmett Rhodes cover. And that's
which Emmett Rhodes? I play Emmett Rhodes all the time.
Yeah, with my face on the floor. What, you know. That
Live Till You Die has just got to be the most amazing. Again, that's what, 2.5 minutes or something like that?
Beautiful too.
Just launches.
Somebody said to me in Australia, you know, I hope... Well, you do a lot of home recording too, don't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, let's hope you don't turn into Emmett Rhodes. And
I know. Isn't that amazing? And I found, I think it was out of Japan, they remastered that infamous album. So I've got it on CD, which is...
It finally come out on CD, didn't
it? Not here.
Down in Australia, somebody had one. And it's a great record, and his stuff is awesome. I like that. I like Mirror. I like both those records.
Amazing.
And he's still doing his thing, but I think he just got so screwed over and got into with the merry-go-round, got going at such a young age.
Yeah, and I know I've introduced my audience recently to the merry-go-round, too, because that was also remastered recently.
Yeah, and I think he was wise he was wise enough to just say, screw it.
Yeah.
You know.
So did you actually move to New York to work for the Jeff Buckley Fan Club?
Mm-hmm.
Was that why you moved to New York?
No,
did you say, job at the Jeff Buckley? I think this will be a great way to start a career. Yeah. Jeff Buckley Fan Club. Because, you know, that's an interesting... Of all the fan clubs you're going to work for, you picked the Jeff Buckley Fan Club.
An interesting one. Well, I didn't move there for that specifically. I was a fan of Jeff's music. But, no, I went off to New York basically to get out of Michigan to try something new. I had some friends who were living there. And, you know, life in the big city and find out what it's like. Better than suburban Michigan, you know? So... I had just ended up, I was there for a year, and, you know, I ended up just writing them a letter saying, hey, I'd like to check out what the music business is about. I love Jeff's music. If you need some cheap help, you know, let me know. And about a month later, they wrote me or called me or something, and that was it.
Now, of course, all that stuff is out again, you know, and remastered and everything
all
else.
Jeff stuff? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I got my copy of Grace and the Live at the Shanae.
They just remastered Grace and sent it to everybody.
Yeah,
with extra tracks on it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I have to check it out.
Okay, again, one of those weird questions, but why do you think, I'm going to ask a serious one again, but why do you think, you know, Buckley, Elliott Smith, why do you think all of these amazing, poppy, great, melodic singer-songwriters, you know, what do you think happens? And I'm not saying, I mean, this is not going to happen to you, Kelly. So we're not trying to set up a, but you know, being that you are into all that stuff so deeply, what do you think? Do you think that it's because, I mean, that, you know, it's easy for a David Gray because, you know, or we can name lots of others, not to be insulting to Mr. Gray, but
who will be around forever.
Well, will be around forever because they kind of do this. You know, their heart rate stays exactly where it stays. And let's face it, an album like yours, an album like Grace, an album like Figure Eight, you know, you can just go on and on. These are not easy plays. These are not instant radio plays. It takes people who really pay attention to music, and that means the fans are dedicated.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not enough, right?
Right. I don't know, you know. I mean, I don't know what the deal is with those dudes if they both got into, you know, I don't know what the, for me.
And there's been a lot like that when you think, I mean, it's weird.
Well, I mean, yeah, like who else you got? Tim Harden, on and on, the tortured singer-songwriter is kind of
right, the tortured singer-songwriter. So you're something like, you don't seem tortured. What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I just,
why are you happy? Come on.
I don't know. I think I go through my own personal, you know, inward, introspective, painful blues every day like everybody else, but I don't know. I just, I figure, I don't know. I like being alive, so I don't want to.
Yeah, me too. What a concept. I know. I don't think these guys like being alive for moment one somehow.
I don't know. I think Jeff liked to be alive. From my interactions with him, he was filled with life. And I'd imagine Elliott Smith or Nick Drake or any of those dudes who become kind of historically tragic figures, basically it's just because they died young. And I think a lot of their living time was spent smiling and laughing more than maybe people imagine. I'm sure they were carrying some kind of depression around with them somewhere, but from my interactions with Jeff, he was always goofing off and making, you know, jokes and being a kind of a mimic and doing a lot of stuff that I do, and I think that when I'm doing that, I'm pretty happy, and that's kind of how I remember seeing him. I never really saw him laid out depressed. I think he, of any of those guys, I think he wanted to just keep living, you know.
Yeah, I think things change. So South by Southwest. Now, have you ever played South by, or are you looking forward to the zoo? Tell the truth, it's okay.
I don't know. I'm not.
So you've never been, huh?
I don't really enjoy drinking beer in the daytime, and you know, I don't eat meat, so the barbecue isn't really calling to me. So I'm more of a night person if I'm gonna have a good time. So I guess you can do that at the shows and stuff.
1,200 bands, 60 clubs. I'm 48, I'm way too old, but that doesn't mean I'm not going because you know, it's a chance to be who you're not to a certain extent. But fair warning from a record company friend, don't eat the burritos on 6th Street. Okay, so here's the fun stuff.
Okay.
Ready? This is how we fill out the rest of the hour, and it's become a trademark, and I think you're just going to have a party with this. We call it a musical sandwich. It's two of your songs is the bread, from your latest, preferably. And then anything you want to play in between, and no matter what you ask me to play, I will play it exactly as a set as you ask for it.
We'll do Little Lords is a piece of bread. That's mine. These guys are playing the Birdie song, so we'll play Birdie singing off the new one. And in between, let's put, I was thinking it'd be good to hear It's a Rainy Day, Sunshine Girl by Faust.
Okay,
and
give me a bunch more.
Okay, let's see. We're continuing on now with the musical sandwich.
Yes.
Here we go.
Let's hear the musical sandwich.
Let's hear Kelly Stoltz doing his best Beach Boys impersonation. Ever thought of coming back? Tim Harden's Hang On to a Dream.
Okay, give me a few more by other artists.
Some other songs?
You bet. Give me five or six more by other artists.
You got a lot of songs, huh?
I got a lot of songs.
You got the Flat Earth Society?
I can find anything.
Okay. Let's hear the Flat Earth Society doing the Midnight Hour in the Midnight Hour. Let's hear Ken Nordine doing Beige.
They were talking about Ken Nordine earlier. You're doing it to me.
Let's hear Love play Que Vida. Let's hear the Monks do Black Monk Time. Let's hear Dave Edmonds do Girls Talk.